From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
At the stroke of his pen, Governor J.B. Pritzker signs the recreational marijuana bill into law. While not legal until January 1st, the wheels are now in motion to prepare for what the state hopes will be a tax windfall from the legal sale of cannabis.
Each year, law enforcement across the nation has spent billions of dollars to enforce the criminalization of cannabis, despite all the research and evidence that it's safer than alcohol. Illinoisans have had enough. They know that what we're doing isn't working. They know that criminalization offers nothing but pain, disruption, and injustice.
This is about repairing harm. Harm that's been done to communities for the last 40 years as a part of the failed war on drugs. And after 40 years of treating entire communities like criminals, here comes this multi-billion dollar industry, and guess what? Black and brown people have been put at the very center of this policy.
That's the Representative Jahan Gordon Booth. Also, you heard from Governor J.B. Pritzker. He signed off on legalizing recreational marijuana use, a landmark law for sure in Illinois, and just the 11th state to allow it. We'll be discussing that. Also, some other major legislation signed this week, all of that coming up here on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford, and joining me in studio, Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, a longtime State House observer as well. And we welcome Sam Dunklaw, an NPR Illinois reporter, to our panel today. Thanks, Sam, for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Sean.
Joining us on the phone from the field, Daisy Contreras. She just got back from covering a couple of those other big pieces of legislation that were signed on Friday morning. And Daisy, I know you had to run to a location to be able to call in, and we do appreciate that. I'm going to go to you first. Daisy, you are in downtown Springfield, and as I mentioned just moments ago as we sat down to record this program, the governor signed into law a big gambling expansion package, also this infrastructure program that was negotiated. These were closely watched over the legislative session, and let's start with infrastructure. $45 billion program. It's called Rebuild Illinois. What do they hope this program accomplishes?
Well, it's going to be the first one in 10 years. Yes, there's a lot of money involved in this, and for a lot of things, for vertical and horizontal, vertical construction and horizontal roads and bridges. And over the next 6 years, we're going to be able to see how this money is being allocated to the whole state. And, you know, there's just so much in this bill. For example, and I'm just going to go off my notes here, there's over $14 billion for new roads and bridges, $10.4 billion for state roads and bridges, $3.9 billion for local governments to rebuild their roads and bridges. So, like, there's just, like, many different levels where all this money is going to go to. And, yes, he also, Governor Pritzker also signed a gambling expansion bill, which also includes the legalization of sports betting. Now, why are these all bundled up together? Well, because the gambling bill is basically the revenue for the vertical construction plan. So all that money, the taxes coming from the gambling plan will go to maintaining buildings, state-owned buildings like prisons and universities, which have been crumbling over the last, for many, many years now.
You mentioned the gambling money that's going to help pay for part of this. Also, gas taxes are going to go up, actually about double the gas tax. Cigarettes are going to cost more. Parking garage taxes also going to come up. Your registration for your license plates, those are going up pretty big as well, percentage-wise. Both Republicans and Democrats, though, were on board with this idea and seems to be pretty much a bipartisan approach to this.
Yeah, and because, you know, these are things that many communities have wanted for decades now. You know, it didn't matter if you were a Republican or a Democrat, your community needed a lot of help with roads and bridges. So if lawmakers wanted to go back to their districts at the end of session and, you know, get a good word in that, you know, they did something for the community, they had to vote for this, even if they didn't want gambling expansion. They needed to say yes to that in order to get the money for their transportation needs.
And Charlie, I should mention that when I mentioned it's bipartisan, quite often these are bipartisan because both parties, as Daisy mentioned, want to take something home to the district.
Yeah, and the, what would I say, the naysayers in the Republican Party, I noticed none of them got up on the floor and said, we don't want any of the projects. They voted against it because they said taxes are too high and we should pay for this some other way, but they'll be happy to take the projects. Historically, it's been a bipartisan operation because members in both political parties in both chambers realize that you have to maintain the state's transportation infrastructure and its economic infrastructure, for example, universities, if you want the economy in Illinois to flourish. And so that's why manufacturing groups, business groups supported the notion of let's raise taxes to fix our roads. One of the things that I found interesting in this legislation was a provision that, well, let me back up and say, Daisy alluded to the fact that the last time we did this was 10 years ago. The time before that we did that was 10 years before. And if I'm not mistaken, it was like 10 years before that. This new law includes a provision that the gasoline tax will be indexed and increase in proportion to inflation so that each year there'll be additional dollars coming in. One of the problems we face is that we had a gas tax that was at 19 cents for, gosh, I think almost 30 years, and the cost of everything goes up, the cost of labor, the cost of asphalt, the cost of equipment. And when you have a static gasoline tax and with more fuel-efficient cars, you're selling fewer gallons of gasoline. And when you have the costs increasing, you're just always going to be behind the eight ball.
Well, let me ask this, though. You mentioned the taxes and the naysayers out there, but they may have a point in the sense that some of these taxes are what we would term regressive taxes. The people who make the less amount of money still have to pay a pretty good chunk on these car registrations, gas taxes.
Oh, yeah. But the people who use the roads tend to be people from all economic strata. Now, somebody might say, oh, I don't even have a car, so why should I have to pay anything? Think about when you go to the grocery store and you get a gallon of milk. Where do you think that milk came from? Do you think the cow was out in the back lot of the grocery store? Or when you buy a can of soup, do you think the grocer canned that soup in his back room? All that stuff gets transported, and a lot of it is done by trucking. And if the roads are bad, that impedes the business growth. It impedes the economic health of the state. So this is a very important thing that needs to be done. And as I say, I think in my mind, one of the nice things about it is that we have this automatic increase. And so you won't have to, every 10 years, struggle to get people to understand that if you want good roads, you're going to have to pay for them. Also, we passed a constitutional amendment a couple years ago that says money from the gasoline tax can't be used for anything else. You can't use it to pay nursing home costs, for example, or pay school teachers. It's got to go to transportation-related expenses. I think that also makes it easier for people to accept an increase in the gasoline tax and license plate fees because they know they're not going to be diverted to something other than what they're intended for.
Daisy, this was probably this had to be near the top, I would think, for Governor Pritzker as far as his agenda was concerned. He had some other things and other things we've already seen get approved even earlier than this, but this was probably the one that he knew was going to have maybe the biggest impact across the state.
Yeah, I think that he realized that there, you know, for the many, many years now, for example, with the gambling expansion, lawmakers have been pushing to get this through, failed multiple times to get new casinos or expand gaming machines at different places. So, yes, this is definitely going to have an impact, especially also with sports betting. I spoke to Senator Terry Link, who was behind the gaming plan in the Senate, and he said, yeah, I mean, the plan is to have sports betting up and running by the time we're in football season later this year. So we'll see if that happens. We'll see, you know, if the money promised comes through. And I think there are still a lot of moving parts to see if the promises are actually come to fruition.
So you have sports betting, you have more casinos coming in as well, and this. I felt as though as this went along, these negotiations on gambling, that it was sort of trying to keep up with Indiana a bit, or maybe Indiana was trying to keep up with Illinois, both states doing some expansions this past spring.
Yeah, Indiana and Iowa just recently also legalized sports betting. A couple of other states, I think, you know, every week we see new states at the end of their sessions legalizing sports betting. So right now I think we're up to 16 different localities around the country that have jumped on this. I think 9 different states already are up and running, other than Nevada. So yeah, I think that sports betting in particular is expanding rapidly over the last year.
You know, and if I may, one of the interesting fights behind the scene that were going on were between sports betting companies like FanDuel and the Rivers Casino folks. Rivers Casino is a casino organization up in the Chicago area. The state has effectively blocked companies like FanDuel from setting up initially in Illinois for a small period of time so that they can have a competitive advantage. So exactly where and how the state is going to implement sports betting infrastructure, I think, remains to be seen.
Yeah, and I think that's up to the gaming board, who is going to oversee how sports betting gets to be done. There's going to be a process, just like with recreational marijuana, to see how that plays out. They are going to be the ones setting up the rules. So we will wait and see how those rules are outlined.
And Charlie, before we move off too much on this, the infrastructure program, certainly if you look close enough in there, there's some possibly questionable spending, some earmarks, people might want to call them, or pork projects that were given to help obtain some votes. That's always done in these types of packages. Does that overshadow? I mean, there was things like dog parks in some areas people are complaining about, that money going to those types of projects. But overall, does that overshadow this in any way?
Well, I suppose people who are purists will look at it and say, oh, this is horrible. We have all this pork in there. But years ago, I came to the, what would you say, kind of the conclusion that pork is something in my district is an important public improvement. So a lot of it is in the eyes of the beholder. And if you are going to ask lawmakers to vote for something that might be difficult, it seems to me reasonable to say, what would you like back in your district? What is most important in your district? The criticism comes that when you do it on a district-by-district basis, maybe a dog park is the most important thing in my district, but maybe there's a bridge, Sean, in your district that needs to get taken care of that won't be because I get my dog park. Mm-hmm. So that's the argument, that we should look at this stuff as a state as a whole rather than as individual pork projects.
And Daisy, before I let you go, and I know you need to get back and get started on putting stories together on what you've covered already today, but the governor is going to be making sort of a, I would call it almost a victory lap around the state here over the next several days into next week, where he's going to be touting some of the things that are both in the infrastructure plan, but also in this gambling package.
Yes, he is going to visit Rockford, Walker's Bluff. Those are the two sites that have been pushing for a casino license over the last few years, and they say that they have investors lined up to start building these casinos. Again, you know, we don't know how long it's going to take to have these up and running, but these are some of the bordering communities from other states that already have casinos, you know, and so they wanted a casino in Illinois so that they can compete with those casinos in other states. So yes, these are some of the stops that the governor is going to make over the next few days, and he'll be doing more photographs and video in order to explain to the communities what this will bring to them.
Okay. Daisy Contreras is an NPR Illinois reporter, and she joined us by phone after covering the governor's signing of both the infrastructure program legislation and the gambling package. And Daisy, thanks once again for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Let me turn now to Sam Dunklaw. Sam, you covered this week the governor signing another big piece of legislation, and that is one that allows recreational marijuana use in the state of Illinois, but not just yet.
Right, not just yet. You'll be able to possess up to an ounce of marijuana, and remember, that's about a small plastic bag full of the stuff, come January 1st. You'll have to be 21 years of age or older. That applies to both the traditional marijuana flower as well as THC concentrate and edible products. Those are all allowed, but in different amounts. The state is going to allow 75 different dispensaries, most of which are in the Chicagoland region, a couple of which are here in the central Illinois region and others. A lot of those are going to be existing medical marijuana dispensaries, as they already have a regulatory framework in place. They're already experienced with the product and are, in the state's eyes at least, able to sell this on a retail basis in a safe manner. And so far, Governor Pritzker, at least the governor's office, estimates that once sales start January 1st, the state will be looking at something like $57 million, rounded up to about $60 million in sales just in the first year. Now, that's down quite a bit. The Associated Press and others have reported that Pritzker's campaign message was that we could get up to $1 billion from legal marijuana. And I think that estimates have come down as we've realistically looked at how much this could potentially bring in just a single fiscal year. But estimates are upwards of $500 million over the next 5 years. And I think it does remain to be seen how much of that is going to help some of the state's long-term problems, like our budget deficit, like our pension problems and things like that. But needless to say, you'll be able to soon get legal cannabis at any one of these dispensaries come January 1st.
So you have the dispensaries that are out there now. Is there at least a point where we're going to see, you know, what would be considered more dispensaries, or would you be able to buy it at like an existing store at some point down the road, like a convenience store or a Walmart or something like that, if they decided to sell it? Do we know that yet?
So far, from what I've been able to see, the regulatory framework that's in place is pretty, shall we say, stringent. You would essentially have to be an established separate dispensary. The same rules apply to if you want to set up a growing facility, a processing facility. The state really wants to keep a tight hold on who it is that it's going to allow to sell these sorts of things. In addition, a lot of brouhaha was made during the session about advertising, how much you could advertise, whether or not that could be targeted to kids. A lot of these are old arguments, and the bill outlines exactly how one can advertise and to who. And so because of all these strict regulations, I would not foresee, at least in the near future, a place like a convenience store being able to sell something like marijuana flower.
One of the things that struck me about this legislation is the, I guess for want of a better term, the dealing with the injustice of our war on drugs, which the representative alluded to in our opening cut. And there is pretty strong recommendations in there, I guess mandates, for a number of convictions of people for possessing small amounts of marijuana to be wiped out. Isn't that, how does that work?
That's, so the estimates have been about 800,000 people would qualify for some form of record expungement. They had specifically emphasized about 250,000 of those people would automatically get their arrest records wiped. These things have become a little bit more clear in the last couple of days. If you were just arrested for having possessed marijuana but were not formally charged or convicted, that arrest record would essentially be automatically wiped. And the state police, whom I just talked to just yesterday, is already in the process of identifying those arrest records and getting those out there. But for those folks that were arrested and convicted, they'll have to go through essentially the same prisoner review board process that a lot of other folks have to go through for different crimes. Once the Prisoner Review Board makes a recommendation to the governor would be able to pardon them. But that process will still have to take place.
But the expectation is that most of them will be pardoned ultimately.
Right. That seems to be the indication from the governor's office at least.
Charlie, when, you know, I grew up around the war on drugs through that era certainly, and you followed this as well through the years. It still is a little surprising, I think, to see Illinois take this step. I think this train has been coming for a long time, but I still thought it was going to be quite a few years away. Only about till last year did I start to get the feeling that this could actually take place. So it's still a little surprising how fast it moved here in the state.
Yeah, it is. But on the other hand, if you look at the public opinion polls, the general tenor of the electorate was that, yeah, we should legalize it.
And you can't deny the fact that the state needs money, needs revenue, and as Sam mentioned, some money's going to be coming in.
Yeah, and that's helpful. And the question is, the opponents would say the money that will be brought in is not going to be enough to cover the problems that are going to be caused, additional addiction, additional people needing mental health treatment, questions for law enforcement. How do we know if Wheeler is driving and he's driving erratically and we pull him over? How can we test to see if he's stoned? Mm-hmm. That kind of thing.
And Sam, you've talked to the state police on they are looking at different ideas and different ways to try to do that.
Yeah, and right now the consensus seems to be oral-based fluid testing, so essentially just swabbing saliva on the side of the road. Acting State Police Director Brendan Kelly had said that other states have tried that to some success and that there seems to be some promise in that technology. But how you measure the amount of THC in your blood versus how you measure the amount of alcohol is actually quite different. For example, THC sticks in your body for a number of weeks after you've consumed it. So how exactly you test for intoxication among those two things is something that they're still working out.
So maybe instead of having you walk a straight line and put your finger to the tip of your nose, they might ask you, hey, you want some munchies?
Charlie solved the problem.
And they'll have a bag of Doritos in the back just in case.
I do want to save some time here at the end to talk as well about some big U.S. Supreme Court decisions that came down this week. First of those, Charlie, I'll go to you, was on regarding a census question that had been proposed by the Trump administration, citizenship question, asking if somebody is a legal citizen of the U.S. And the Supreme Court pretty much struck that idea down, at least for now. There's still some talk of possibly different ways that could make it on to the census. But that's good news, I would guess, for the state of Illinois if they're trying to get an accurate count, especially of a large Latino population in Illinois.
Yeah. One of the concerns about the citizenship question is that it would tend to leave out or discourage people, particularly people of color, particularly people of Hispanic heritage, who may or may not have the proper documentation, from filling out the forms. And that would result in an undercount. And so, for example, in places like Chicago, the neighborhoods that are very heavily Latino population, the expectation would be that a significant portion of those folks wouldn't get counted. And the U.S. Commerce Department, which oversees the census, said, well, we're trying to do this to enforce the Voting Rights Act. And the justices kind of scratched their head and said, yeah, that doesn't seem to make sense. You got to come up with a better reason than that. And so they did not disallow the question totally, but they said it's on hold for now. And I guess that the latest I saw was the Trump administration is thinking about maybe just delaying the census until they can get their way on putting in the citizenship question. But it would be, as I said, I think it would be difficult for Illinois, or it would be a problem for Illinois, if you had to ask everybody if they were a citizen or not. And it doesn't necessarily, or it does not at all, comport with what the Constitution says. The Constitution doesn't say anything in its enumeration that you count citizens. It says you count residents, the U.S. Constitution. And so if there is a significant undercount, particularly among the Hispanic community, which tends to vote Democratic, that would result with Illinois having, on paper, fewer people living here. Therefore, that would affect our representation in Congress. That would affect how much federal aid we get for a variety of different programs. So there's a lot at stake for Illinois in this.
Well, just a couple of minutes left here, and I think we can talk about this other issue coming up in the future a little bit more in detail. But the court also ruling this week, an opinion put out that said that the federal courts really don't have a say in partisan gerrymandering, and that certainly is something that people are watching in states like Illinois when we're getting close again to drawing the district boundaries for legislative offices. So what do you take away from this, Charlie, somebody that follows this pretty closely? What do you take away that it means here in the state of Illinois, or does it mean anything yet?
Well, it may, when the maps are going to be drawn next time around. And that will be after the 2020 census in the 2021 legislative session, when the maps will be drawn. If you look at it, allowing partisan gerrymandering is good for Democrats in Illinois. It's bad for Democrats elsewhere. Because as a result of the election of 2010, the maps that were drawn in 2011 for Congress in a lot of states were gerrymandered to elect Republicans overwhelmingly. Here, we did it to elect Democrats. And had the court ruled that this is a violation of a person's right for representation when you have these gerrymandered maps, then Illinois Democrats would have had to draw a more fair map, but it would also help the Democratic Party nationally. So I suspect what this will do is it will allow the Democratic map makers to jury-rig the lines to try and maximize their hold of the legislature. And the question will be, will Governor Pritzker live up to the promise he made as a candidate, saying that he would veto any redistricting plan that was not fair? Now, fairness is in the eye of the beholder, so we'll see what happens.
And just real quick here, Charlie, just a few seconds left here, but does this open the door, you think, for this idea of having some type of commission put in place, or does this kind of slam the door on that?
Well,
I would say, to draw those boundaries.
Well, as a practical matter, you have to amend the Constitution to put in some other form of redistricting other than what's contained there now, which starts with the General Assembly. The chances of the Democratic majority putting through a constitutional amendment to, in essence, tie their hands from making maps to their liking, I think, is zero. And the Citizens Initiative, which has been tried a couple of times, would work if the people who draw up these proposals would follow the guidelines laid out in the Constitution for citizens' initiatives for constitutional amendments. I'm not going to get into all the details, but the previous attempts were thrown out, and the judges said the reason is you didn't follow what the Constitution says.
We'll talk more about that, I think, in coming weeks. A lot to get into when it comes to redistricting. Let's go to our notes from the field, and Sam, let's start with you.
So the state fire marshal put together a list of firework injuries from the last year as sort of a public safety awareness ahead of the July 4th holiday. 134 injuries were reported with fireworks. About half of those were folks under the age of 22. And sparklers, as it turns out, something that's pretty widely available in a lot of stores, accounted for about a quarter of those injuries. And that would be because they're basically welding torches. So in other words, from the state fire marshal, be careful.
All right, Charlie.
Well, we've talked about all the legislation that Governor Pritzker has gotten enacted and signed, and he's really been a fast tracker on the legislative front. Turns out he's also something of a speeder on the water. He was ticketed by the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources for speeding on Geneva Lake in Wisconsin the first week of June. He was up there on a boat with his family in Williams Bay and enjoying the weekend, and he exceeded the speed limit, and so he got a ticket.
Okay. All right. Members of our broadcast included Charlie Wheeler, Sam Dunklaw, and also Daisy Contreras, who joined us earlier. Get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org. Also find us on NPR One. Production assistance for the program provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.